What happens when secrets are revealed? That's the question at the heart of Pivot's Secret Lives of Americans. It's a groundbreaking documentary series that looks at the secrets we all keep, the strength it takes to reveal them to family and friends, and the realization that you are not alone. You can watch an all-new episode of Secret Lives of Americans this Friday at its new time, 7 p.m. Eastern and Pacific on Pivot. Secret Lives of Americans deals with some really important subjects, such as religious tolerance, addiction, transgender rights, same-sex marriage, and student debt. What makes this show truly unique is that each person filmed themselves with a handheld camera or phone over the course of several days. We see their lives change firsthand when they make the important decision to open up. Through each person's reveal, one thing becomes clear. It only takes one voice to change the story. Watch an all-new episode of Secret Lives of Americans this Friday at its new time, 7 p.m. Eastern and Pacific, on Pivot, the television network from Participant Media. To find out how you can watch Pivot, go to pivot.tv.
The smartest guys around are about to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor know-it-alls.
Yes, that's right. The Survivor Know-It-Alls are back with the Australian mateship, Stephen Fishback.
The Know-It-Alls, the Survivor Know-It-Alls.
Yes, yes. Is that name, that name's available, Stephen Fishback?
Yeah.
Know-It-Australia? Yeah. Yes.
Know-It-Australia, yeah.
Yes. I really like the smartest guys around are about to break it down under. We are ready to go. Here we are to talk about the first two nights of Australian Survivor. What we're going to do here today, we are actually streaming live here on robinswebsite.com. We're going to talk about Survivor or Australian Survivor. I'm tempted to say Survivor Australia, but no.
Well, this is actually a point of contention because they're not, even within the episode, some people will say Australian Survivor, some people will say Survivor Australia. And my question for you, Rob, is like, why say, if you're in Australia, why say Survivor Australia? Why don't they just call themselves Survivor?
Yeah, it is tricky that, you know, in Big Brother Canada, they refer to it, but they are playing in Canada. You know, this is Australian Survivor in Deep Samoa. So yeah, they're not we had a Survivor in Australia. These are Australians playing Survivor in Samoa. That is what we're talking about.
I just feel like it's, don't sell yourself short. You're a Survivor. You know, you don't have to be Survivor like offshoot.
I don't know.
Just be you.
Well, we could talk about that. No, AU. So that's what we're going for. So we have a lot to talk about here today. What we're going to do is we're going to start off by opening this up, just talking about spoiler free. We are going to talk about just what we thought of the first two nights, 2.5 hours. Stephen Fishback said it wasn't long enough.
That's not what I said. The episodes are really long, and that to me, you know, the second one is 55 minutes of pure TV. And I was saying to Rob earlier, I only have patience for 44 minutes of pure TV, which is what an American episode is. That's all I can do. All right. It was great. Honestly, it was really great. And I'm overall impression, great.
Yeah. All right. Second thumbs up.
Too many people. You don't need 24 so people.
Basically, you're saying that gluttony, really. That the episodes are too long. There's too many people. It's too many days. For the uninitiated, if you're listening to this, because this is going to be in the main Rob Has a Podcast feed, but after this week, we're going to have this in the Reality TV Wrap-Ups feed and in its own Survivor Australia feed. So I'm sure that people are listening to this for the first time and maybe haven't seen the episodes, but there are 55 days, 24 contestants, one survivor here on Survivor Australia, Stephen, or Australian Survivor.
And I really had a lot of trouble keeping the contestants straight. And I think that's why, you know, you want 16 to 20 people. Once you're at 24, it's like there's like four like kind of like brunettes with like sort of sharp noses. And, you know, when you're just getting to know people, you're really looking for like the broad distinguishing features in order to tell them apart. Obviously, as we get to know them over the many, many weeks to come, we'll be able to tell them apart better by their personalities and all the different, you know. But out of the gate, I want my one brunette. You know, I want my like archetypes. I want my classic Survivor archetypes. This sort of is blown open the whole thing. But overall, great, right? Right?
Yeah, it was very, very strong. Steven, if we had flashcards with the faces on it, if we were in some sort of like a Name That Tune showdown, if I said, Steven Fishback, I could name 14 of the Survivor Australian contestants' first names by showing me their picture, could you beat that?
No. No, I would not.
I think I could. I think I could. I think
14.
I could.
Well, the thing is, there may be 12. I don't know. I guess I would go for it, Rob, just because I'm a gambling man.
Yeah, I feel like maybe somebody could work on the Sporkle quiz by the time we end up tonight. But I do think that they did a pretty good job. I definitely understand what you're saying, but they did a pretty good job. I did have, the help of a cheat sheet by the end of the second episode. That was put together. I got sent this by Josh Lemer, put this fine cheat sheet together. But I did feel like that the tribes of eight I thought were manageable, even though it's a three tribe format. Again, if you haven't seen it, three tribes, eight people each in these tribes. Definitely there are a couple people that I would have had a hard time still even naming at this point. But I think that overall they did a pretty good job of almost everybody got at least a beat of a story.
Yeah, except really Barry. Barry just got like nothing.
Yeah. But at least you know who he is. You know he is because he's the one black person in 24 Australian survivors.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think and one of the few minorities, I'm not even sure I can't tell if Brooke is an ethnic minority as well. But you know, maybe minorities are different, I guess, in Australia, you know? But what's cool about it is that a lot of these people are huge fans of the game, huge fans of the show. You got some really big characters who are just kind of like popping out of the gate. I loved Connor, for example. You know, such a big fan, so wide-eyed, really just like kind of embracing the experience. He kind of had like that, like 80s movie, like the lead of an 80s movie, like Ralph Macchio kind of thing happening, where he's like, you know, he's handsome and he's lithe, but he's still like kind of like small and plucky, you know?
Yeah. So Steven is a big Karate Kid fan. Who knew?
Yeah, the original one, you know. And I wouldn't compare him to Jaden Smith.
No, you shouldn't. Nor should you. Overall, I did feel like that the show looked stunning, Steven. I think if you were coming into Australian Survivor, as we are, as people watching the CBS American version, almost, I'd say, no fall off whatsoever to, I thought sometimes it looked better than the U.S. Survivor.
I mean, I don't think it's as seamless. I think one thing that American Survivor has really perfected is the seamlessness of these cuts between the different, the wildlife into the scene, and then the way the graphics are animating. But it was beautiful.
Sure,
there's no question.
I'm not talking editing. I'm just talking about in terms of like what the picture is looking like on my screen. It looked incredible. I really was very impressed with how it looked.
Great. It looked great. Yeah, it really did. And LaPaglia, he's great.
Yeah. The host of the show, his name is Jonathan LaPaglia. I had tweeted on Sunday that Jeff Probst plus Wolverine equals Jonathan LaPaglia. He seemed to like it. He said that was hilarious, Rob.
And I thought he was great.
Jeff Probst did not favor it.
He's doing a little bit of a Jeff Probst thing, right? Like basically it's like he has the Jeff Probst rule book, or handbook.
Sure.
And he's kind of like he's using almost the exact same phrases. Sometimes he'll have like slight variations. Like instead of "come on in, guys," he'll say "get over here," which I guess makes him sound like he's
Scorpion.
In Mortal Kombat.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. I thought he sold it. I think no matter what, no matter who comes in, they're going to be compared to Probst. I think if he went off the reservation and did his own thing entirely, he can only lose in comparison. If he, he basically gave Jeff's entire speech almost verbatim about, like, in this game, fire represents life, and when your fire is out, you know, so are you. But, like, why not? It's a tried and true, tested thing. It really establishes the credibility of the show. You know, if he gave some kind of, like, offshoot of that, it would just be like, why are you doing that, guy? What did you think? What did you think of Rob? Did you think he was too close, too Probst, or not Probst? You know, or what was your, like, you know?
No, I didn't. I thought he did a great job. I mean, that certainly that he is a lot better than Jeff Probst on day one of the first Survivor, where Jeff Probst really doesn't know where he's going. And of course, you know, that driver's manual hasn't been written yet. But you definitely get the feeling that Jonathan is exactly playing from the Jeff Probst handbook, which I think works. It's just basically like if you had some sort of Australian reimagining of Jeff Probst, that's what this is. I sort of liked a lot of the wardrobe choices he was going with, where it was sort of like that. Sometimes he's just wearing like a t-shirt and like seemingly like a bathing suit. And I thought it all worked fine. I thought
Then he had Platt at Tribal Council.
Yeah,
right?
I like that too.
Yeah.
So that was strong as well. So overall, I felt like that was this host and this show arrives fully formed. It's not like that there's any sort of a learning curve here for Survivor Australia, like it's really figuring itself out. I mean, unlike minor things, but basically this is a fully formed like version of the show that is not that far of an offshoot of the Survivor that we're watching twice a year in the U.S.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, and LaPaglia just like owns it. You know, he gives good challenge commentary. You know, he really seems like to in control. He seems at ease. And I liked that in the first Tribal Council, he said, "This is my first Tribal Council too." I thought that was like a nice moment. It didn't seem insecure. It seemed like I'm acknowledging this is I'm new to this too. And I thought that was a cool little moment.
But he did a great job and really gave it back to people where it should have been. And you didn't have a moment where you said, "Oh, Jeff would have been all over that if that happened on a U.S. version of the show." So very strong job to open up for Jonathan LaPaglia.
Yeah, I thought if anything, he was too much. Like, I felt like sometimes he was like blowing up people's spot a little bit in a way that like suggested he knew. You know, I mean, I'm thinking specifically about, you know, not to get into spoiler territory, but the One Tribe claims they made fire when they didn't. And he really digs in. He really digs in.
Would have exactly done the same exact thing. Like, I felt like
I don't know. I think Jeff gives you a little bit of room to lie with that stuff. I think Jeff will let you kind of like, you know, lie and not you know, by the third follow-up question, it's like you're trying to catch them here.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll talk about all that. Just a couple other quick things. So Survivor Australia, Australian Survivor, one of the big differences, it's on twice a week, Sunday nights and Monday nights in Australia, of course, so that we have to get through our 24 survivors. Is twice a week too much of a good thing, Stephen?
Well, I mean, you know, for me it is.
Yes.
You know, I that's the only reason I don't watch Big Brother is because it's on too much.
That's the only reason?
Well, you know. If it was on once a week, I would totally watch it. But anyway, yeah. So, I would rather have the streamlined. I want, but maybe in a couple of weeks I'll be craving, you know, more episodes of the show.
Yeah. The other thing
Does it work with? Oh, go ahead.
The other thing I was going to ask you about was that the availability of the links to watch this, that it is geo-restricted for people that are outside of Australia. A lot of people are sort of like passing links among friends. How much do you think that that's going to be an issue for the American viewing audience or international viewing audience outside of Australia?
Yeah, I don't know. I've gotten a lot of people tweeting at me, like, where are you getting it from? How do I watch? I mean, that's just like the nature of the TV business. I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah, I don't know exactly. I think that my best advice for people at this time, and maybe we'll have more answers to it, is just keep an eye on the Survivor Reddit that they have tend to have. There'll be other people who probably are going to be sharing links and posting links. And I think that that's probably a great place to start for trying to find these Survivor Australia episodes. I think that after a while, I was having a hard time tracking them down, you know, in the first few hours after the show, but then by later this morning, when I was up at 5 o'clock this morning trying to get my hands on the second episode, it was tricky.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, and if you're a censor, you know, don't look at the Survivor Reddit. You know, if your job is to worry about permission, stay away from there.
Yeah.
Rob, I got a question for you. Big issue here. 55 days. That seems enormous.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see exactly how they're going to play this out, because my thinking coming into it was, oh, okay, 55 days. Well, you could do 55 days on Survivor as long as you sort of make it easier on people. You sort of give them more supplies and sort of, because I don't care about this too much of the Survivor. Like, I don't need to see people like starving to death or anything like that. But Steven, I felt like just the opposite. I thought that the first two nights of Survivor Australia seemed just as hard or perhaps even harder than many U.S. Survivor seasons.
I don't think they necessarily were harder. I do think they showed more of that difficulty.
Very fair.
And I liked that. You know, I mean, maybe I actually kind of thought it's like because it's new, it's like a new show, they're like establishing the stakes for the, you know, the built-in audience there. It's like, this is really surviving. There's really a lot of this. Or maybe it's like a different Australian temperament, whereas like the U.S. Survivor wants more of one thing, while the Australian Survivor wants more of a different thing.
Let me tell you a couple of links that you need for our Australian podcast as we get ready to talk about spoilers. We have a podcast link dedicated to Survivor Australia. If you want to subscribe to that, go to robhasawebsite.com/survivorau, not BU. That's robhasawebsite.com/survivorau, and that'll take you directly to the iTunes store where you can subscribe to our dedicated feed for Survivor Australia. Plus, this podcast will be in our reality TV wrap-ups feed coming up following this week. If you want to send in email questions to the show every week, we're going to probably record these on Mondays. Not sure if we'll be live all the time for these, depending, I guess, on Steven and my availability. SurvivorAU at robhasawebsite.com. And we are looking to have some Australian fans on as guests to report on some things along the way. So if that's something that you might be interested in, you have a good connection and want to come on with Steven and I, let us know there. SurvivorAU at robhasawebsite.com. How's your power cord? You good?
It's good. I'm good. I'm back. So yeah, I just want to say, like, I thought the survival stuff was fantastic. I liked that there was more of it. But it was, you know, I don't think it was harder. I do think they really like got into it a little bit more.
All right. So let's go ahead and you ready to talk spoilers, Steven, from the episode?
Yeah.
All right. Last chance to get out here if you haven't seen the episodes, but you're going to. We're talking spoilers from here on out.
The Office of Civil Defense has issued the following message. This is
a spoiler
warning.
A spoiler
warning means that an actual
spoiler
against this country has been detected and that protective action should be taken.
Ow, I burned my thumb. I burned my hand on the buzzer, Steven.
Wow.
Go soak it by yourself. Yeah, they really sort of dropped that storyline right after. Like, they sort of left Connor in the water, and it was like, I guess he's okay.
Yeah, at a certain point, you know, yeah. It seems like he burned his hand a little bit. He soaked it. He got better.
You would have thought maybe by the second night that maybe he would have used that as an excuse for why they lost the second challenge. Like, you know, maybe don't put the guy with a burn on his hands out as your, you know, ace thrower in the immunity challenge.
Connor doesn't make excuses. That's not the type of guy he
you
is.
Love Connor so much.
I like Connor. Do you not like Connor?
No,
I don't like
Connor. Really? And I'll tell you why.
Is it because of Bianca?
Because he narked out my favorite Bianca. I was all ready to go on the Bianca hype train in the second episode. I said, this is my Bianca. And then he ratted them out just because he wanted to talk to those girls, Steven.
From Bayonka to Nayonka.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. But Steven, we have to start our coverage here talking about the first episode and the rise and fall of Dez Quilty.
Was there a rise?
Yeah, there was a rise. There was a rise. There was a lot of preseason hype about Dez. A lot of people were like, oh, this guy's a character. This guy is going to be so exciting. He gets a very early, long confessional where he's talking about how I'm smarter than a dog. And he's talking about, you must have heard me tell a whopper. And then I was like, oh, this guy is going to be
IQ
like,
IQ is higher than you've had hot meals, Rob.
Right, right. And so felt like this is going to be the big Tom of the, you know, the star of the show.
Oh, really? I felt like this was going to be the chicken of the show.
Well, he certainly was, Steven. Yeah. And by the end of the night, we were all saying,
damn. Oh, they're really going hard on these. Yeah. It really was like a perfect chicken situation.
Chicken situation. Hold on, is that my favorite Baylor song? Chicken situation.
Where, you know, same thing happened with Chicken. He starts on this tribe full of young people. He refuses
Long,
to help out.
I believe.
Yeah, you know, Chicken did not help out. Wasn't Chicken on John Who?
Stephen, don't ask me China stuff.
Yeah.
I remembered Fei Long. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you're right. It was John Who.
The kids are like asking for his advice, and he's kind of like sitting there smirking, like being like, I don't know. You know, you do it your way. And as a result, he's never able to integrate with like the young folks.
Yeah, it was a real major miscalculation. I think he went right into sort of a Des Hance mode where he felt like, I've always wanted to be the villain, and he was ready to go, but he's out by night one. And then it was sort of like that late decision to say like, oh, I better start showing everybody how to do things.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, like even if he had been showing people how to do things from the get-go, I still don't think they would have voted off Kat. You know, I think there seemed to be a pretty big demographic connection there happening. And I think that probably overwhelmed, you know, I think Des being, you know, significantly older than the next person on the tribe, who's 33, Des is 59. I think that was always going to be a huge difference. You know, a lot of these people are white collar.
We're not doing that, Stephen.
But I do think there's something to it. You know, you've got account executive, brand manager, lawyer, high school drama teacher, and then you have like courier driver. I don't think that, you know, I think he probably was just not connecting with them in addition to his sort of, you know, crotchetiness.
You really think that was the factor there, that they were too white collar? I mean, I felt like that there was, it seems like that you have the two young guys, Rohan and Lee, and they seem to have a four-person thing going on. The right. Women also were united together. There was just no scenario where Des was connected with anybody.
Well, that's really what I'm saying. Although, you know, according to Evan, you know, there was like an outcast alliance of Evan, Des, and Christy. So
yeah, but Christy, that's a major outcast. Does Evan know what he's doing, Stephen? Is he a reliable narrator?
I don't think so. You know, the guy who wants to lie about being a high school drama teacher.
Yeah, I was thinking of you in that moment when he's like, oh, I can't tell anybody I'm a drama teacher because they'll know I'm acting.
Yeah, that may be the most extreme. I mean, lying? That may be the most extreme. I guess Tony lying about being a cop is pretty extreme, but lying about being like a high school teacher.
I kind of got that. There was a girl on Big Brother that lied that she was a nurse and told people she was a teacher. It's just like people, but really to tell people that you can't tell people you're a high school drama teacher. Come on, Evan.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. I thought that was ridiculous, but I'm not saying that class or cast was necessarily the thing that was keeping Des from everybody else. I just think it was one of the things. I think this is a guy who's inherently going to be an outcast from a lot of these other people for a bunch of different reasons, temperament included. And he was. And the fact that he kind of like never gel. I think the fact that he wasn't sharing was a function of the fact that he wasn't gelling with them and not necessarily the other way around.
Did you feel like at any point he worked his way back into the good graces and he was going to be able to stave off being voted out on the first night?
No. Did you think there was any chance Kat was going home at tribal council?
No, there just wasn't ever a viable alternative that was going to be somebody that you thought could have been thrown under the bus. I thought that maybe we might have seen, it looked like at one point maybe the guys were going to stick together if they sort of were able to smell that it was going to be a four-person women alliance maybe coming together. There was one point that he talks to either Rohan or Lee about it, and I said, okay, maybe he'll be okay. But by the time they get to tribal council, I really did feel like that the Australian survivor in these first two nights was missing the storyline of, we could vote for Des, but does he have the hidden immunity idol? I felt like we were missing that beat in the story.
Wonderfully missing it.
Does he have the hidden immunity idol? Because it was a real foregone conclusion by the time we got to that first tribal council.
Yeah, that's how, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
The second
they tried to play it up with Right. Like, oh, he built the shelter and he got a whole montage of shelter building. And like, not for nothing, but he did a lot of freaking work pretty quickly on that with like the weaving and the building and like the teaching others to weave. Like, that's a lot of work that they put in that space of time.
Yeah, he really did do a lot, but he was not able to overcome the disaster in the puzzle. Steve, I know you watched
the disaster. The disaster
in the puzzle. I know you watch this stuff pretty closely. Who do you point the finger to on the puzzle? Was it Dez or was it Kat or was it equal share of this bastard known as the puzzle loss?
It just seemed like you couldn't, you know, so much of any of these puzzles especially is communicating well with the person you're working with. And these two just disliked each other from the get-go. You know, you really couldn't have put two worse people in for the puzzle.
Yeah. And we got to that moment at Tribal Council where Jonathan is getting into it with everybody and how they're voting. Yeah. And we did get the great quote from Dez where he says to Kat, like, "I don't like you, Kat, sometimes."
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, what was great too is that Kat was like, "Well, we of course like each other. You know, just sometimes we don't get along."
Oh, I don't like you.
Just a like generic statement of like, "Oh, we're all friends here," and then Dez is like, "No, we're not."
Yeah. Sometimes I don't like you, Kat.
Now, what did you tell me? Is this the right move? Let's say Lee and Rohan, is getting rid of Dez the right move, or should they have gotten rid of Kat?
Well, it's hard to say because where we have I think that there's a lot more meat on that bone in terms of the decision that gets made at the second tribal council. I don't really think that this is a clear cut case of where you're better off to keep Dez versus Kat. I think in this spot, just like the chicken versus, I'm not sure who was the other person who was in the whether it was it Ashley Mazzaro?
It may have been Ashley because she was sick. I know PG was also in conflict with chicken from the beginning because there was like a bossiness issue.
Yeah.
I don't know. It may have been Ashley, though. You may be right about that.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's just like one of these things where it's not like a clear cut case where it's like, okay, well, Kat is a disaster and that there is going to be some major penalty to keep her around. I mean, Dez is just such a loose cannon. That guy's always going to be negative energy around the camp. So I can't kill them for deciding to vote him off. It's a unanimous decision. It's an easy one to get under their belt. I mean, you could, if the guys tried to pull something off where they were able to do some sort of, you know, 4-4 tie, or if Evan is able to pull Christy over and, you know, really blindside the women here in that spot, creates a lot of dissension in the ranks. And I think that this was just such an easy decision that it's a nice one to get under your belt. Dez did a lot of work before he left. He blew it in the puzzle. He's a liability in the puzzle.
Yeah.
He might be strong in the challenges, but he's probably slow in the challenges too.
We haven't seen him being strong in the challenges either. We just saw him.
Well, I meant strong as in like he's like physically, I think he carry a lot of stuff.
But we have no reason to think that. You know, we can say that, but there's no real reason to believe that's the case.
I mean, I felt like he was picking up like big parts of the shelter on his own. So he looks like he might have some strengths in the challenges, but doing the puzzle was not one. So I say, you know, I love Dez as a viewer, but I can totally get on board with the move.
Yeah. And I don't think like, I think maybe some people thought, well, there's a woman's alliance there. Like, aren't the guys being short-sighted and not recognizing that? I mean, that kind of sort of off the cuff alliance, you know, quickly fragments as we saw the next episode, right? Where already everyone, it was sort of turning on Christy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't think that's a real fear long term, you know, at this point. You know, it's like one thing to talk about on day, I mean, I can't even keep track of their days.
I don't know what the days are, to be honest. I'm really a little bit lost in terms of the days. You know, before we get into talking about the second tribal council and everything that went on in episode number two, I'd love to get your take on sort of the marooning and the setup here. Steven,
very familiar to me, yes. Rob. It was basically what they did in Survivor Cambodia, except instead of fire, it was rice. You know, you're on a raft, you're gathering supplies, and then you have to sort of, you know, you have to like race off into to grab the fire, and you have the option, you know, you basically are sort of this tension of like, how many supplies do we get now versus do we go for the fire?
Yeah. I was so excited for a split second because when Jonathan started handing out the buffs, I think it was the first team. He says, "All right, you are the red tribe." And then he didn't say a tribe name for a second. I was like, "Oh, this is great. Just call them the red tribe. Yeah, this is great. Red tribe, yellow tribe, blue tribe." No, they had to give them a dumb name.
Well, we should just call them Red Tribe, Yellow Tribe, Blue Tribe.
Sinapu, Aganal, and Vanu, something like that. Red Tribe, Yellow Tribe, Blue Tribe will suffice for the ugly Americans.
And kudos to Red Tribe, by the way. Not the greatest tribe out of the gate, but when their canoe foundered and then the other two tribes were racing for the fire, they were like, let's go back and get more supplies. That was a great call.
Yeah. Steven, so what is the strategy we had where I believe it was Kelly Wigglesworth, your buddy, ended up being the first person to dive in the water to go get the advantage? Like, what is that like fine line? And you were telling Joey Amazing, like, oh, you should do it. You should do it. What is that the right point in time when you leave the boat to go and swim for whatever the thing is?
The point in time when you can get it fastest is the right time.
Okay, thank you.
There's no real rule there. I mean, you know, Kelly jumped too soon, right? So Kelly jumped and then immediately gassed
out. Is it halfway? Is it three quarters? What's the right move?
It's a percentage of an indefinite distance. You know, what if it's 6 miles? The three quarters are halfway.
Yeah, but
totally
it's never going to be 6 miles on the show.
I'm just saying, who
it's
knows?
It's not the World Cup of yachting. Yeah.
You know, Kelly jumped too soon, right? And she kind of gassed out, and Joe was going to overtake her, and then Wu jumped.
Yeah.
Really, like, everyone should just swim.
Everybody leaves the boat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did like how Red Tribe, when Red Tribe was like, hey, we don't have a shot at this. Let's go back and get more supplies. I like that.
I just said that.
Yeah. I'm saying that was a good move.
Yeah, it was a good move.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about some of these other tribes, at least through night one or through the first challenge. We got to see a lot from Blue Tribe, who ultimately won on the back. They won the fire on the back of Sam. They also win the first immunity challenge.
Blue Tribe's my favorite, right? We all love Blue Tribe.
No, Blue Tribe is not my favorite.
What? Oh, I loved Blue Tribe.
No, I'm very down on Blue Tribe at this point.
Yeah, right now we're sad about it. You know, Bianca's was on Blue Tribe. You know, Flick, you know, Peter. How do you not love Peter?
Flick? Yeah. What are you loving about Peter?
His suit.
His suit is good. All right. Well, you know, let's not bury the lead here. Let's just talk through this second tribal council as well. And then we can talk about the Yellow Tribe after this.
Yeah.
Steven, I hated this decision so much to vote out Bianca.
It's the right decision.
No.
Though, right?
I mean, no, it's not.
Yeah. I was upset too. Look, when Bianca in the first episode, you know, was running around scheming, I loved it. And you know, every time we saw Bianca on screen, suddenly, like, the orchestration changed. We were getting, like, villain music. You know, they were not hiding the fact that Bianca was a schemer and a strategist. But, like, what is she doing? You know, just like you were saying about Dez, easy consensus, boot. Why screw things up? Why build ascension in the tribe? Peter's basically saying, I'm gassed out. I don't want to be here. And then Bianca's like, you know what? Let's target Flick, who's, like, a strong young person. You know, like, just way too soon. She obviously picked the wrong person to say it to. I think it was the right decision for Connor to not get sort of caught in the crosshairs and to just like build trust with his alliance and cement that and get rid of the troublemaker.
Here's why this is a major problem, because you have this Blue Tribe and you have Peter, who really doesn't want to be there. He doesn't even think he can be there that much longer. If he quits the game tomorrow, now you go to tribal council again and you're down a third person because you have to vote somebody else out of the tribe. So you knew what Bianca was. You sort of had her isolated. It's like, okay, you could freeze out Bianca. She's going to be better in the challenges than Peter. And then you don't have to worry about Peter. If you get a big rainstorm and Peter wants to quit the next day, you end up losing an extra person. It was like, you knew that Bianca was on the shelf. The in case of emergency break glass. Okay, if we go to tribal council, what's the big deal? We'll just vote out Bianca.
Totally disagree, Rob. I think you've got this troublemaker. You know she's trying to spread dissension in your ranks. You know she's creating chaos. She's pulling Kylie over. She's trying to pull Connor over. She's trying to kill the cohesion that is so important to tribes. Get rid of her now. If you lose Peter tomorrow, like, so what? Like, you know, Peter's going to be a force of positivity. You know, being down in numbers in a three tribe season, as we know, is not that bad a thing. So I think, you know, you get rid of the bad apple, you get rid of the one who's making trouble. I think, you know, too much too soon, Bianca. It's episode two. You're already trying to like upend everything. You know, wait till like later in the game. Wait till just before the merge.
Did I mention that Peter is playing in the next immunity challenge? Did I mention that he's going to be one of your seven people out there in the next time you need immunity?
But then you vote him out then. Like, if you lose again, then do it. But like, if someone is like scheming and someone is targeting your alliance, you know, certainly the right move for Flick, right? Like, obviously for her to get rid of the person who's voting for her. Certainly the right move for Brooke to get rid of the person who's like targeting her alliance. Mm-hmm. You know, probably the right moves for, you know, Matt and Sam. Again, like, they're all in an alliance of four together. Who's it a bad move for? Who is getting rid of Bianca really a bad move for?
I think that it is a major issue where you have Peter, who's such a liability. I think that you are going to then be losing as well, I guess, Kylie as well. Then she's probably the next person out after that.
No, because that was the whole thing. That was the why you get rid of Bianca, is she's like pulling over Kylie, who could be a part of your core. You lose the next immunity challenge, then you cut Peter.
If I'm saying, what if Peter quits, though? That Peter is saying he wants out to begin with.
I mean, that doesn't seem that like, I mean, so you... Yeah,
you know, we've seen this before on Survivor, where somebody, you know, that doesn't want to, you know, somebody ends up quitting and then you kept them around and then they quit and now you're screwed even more.
When?
I'm sure that's happened before. I know it's happened. Like, chat room bailed me out on this
thing, right? Chet quit and that kind of screwed over Chet's alliance. But that was on a tribe that was like very divided. And, you know, yes, tribes lose, and it's conceivable that Blue will continue to lose, and having voted off Bianca, like, that doesn't mean they're going to solve their problems. The thing is, they still have, what's great about losing Peter is you still have that buffer. You know, they can lose and then get rid of Peter, and then, you know, they don't have Bianca kind of like mixing things up. I think it's totally the right decision.
Yeah, I don't think it was, you know, maybe I have my Bianca fanboy hat on, maybe that's the case, but... I really feel like that if I was there, I would have really lobbied to just, let's just get rid of Peter, especially that if you're the guys that, I mean, she wasn't coming for you.
Yeah, but she's coming for your alliance and she's like pulling over Kylie. She's trying to get Connor, like, you know, get rid of it. Get rid of it now.
Okay. I'm interested to know what you guys have to say in the chat room and in the chat room and in the comments, let us know your take on this group. What do you think of Sam and his leadership?
Sam.
He's de facto Sam. Leader of the Blue Tribe, I feel like.
Sam's one of those guys who's like really like does a bad job of being falsely humble. You know, people like tell him how great he is and like, no, team effort. Even though when it was like, it was him and he knows it's him and he like pretends that it's not him.
Is he like the Brendan from your season?
I can see this, you know, he is sort of similar to Brendan. He's like an amazing athlete. You know, charitably involved. I can see that. That's not a terrible comparison. What did you think of Sam?
Yeah, I thought he's okay. I felt like that he really got a great edit in the first episode. I was definitely getting some winner edit vibes from him in the first episode. Like, he had a montage of him doing all the great stuff around the camp. Like, you know, really that, you know, this is Sam's team that we're on. I do prefer Mentalist Matt or Magic Matt, but, you know, it'll be interesting to see who the real power player is. I feel like that.
So you're really not into Connor, huh?
No, I'm not really into Connor after the stick thing, after he ratted out Bianca. I thought he was okay, Connor.
I mean, he really is giving me Daniel LaRusso vibes. You know, he's going to come back and like karate kick his way to victory. What do you think it's the right? So you don't think it's the right move for Connor to have turned on Bianca? I think that actually is a more interesting question than should the tribe have gotten rid of Bianca? What should Connor have done in that situation?
Yeah, I guess that it's hard to say. I mean, are you better off with sort of like keeping some things under your hat, or are you better off to sort of like cash that check immediately and throw Bianca under the bus? That I would feel like I would rather keep as many allies with me in the game rather than destroy somebody just to get in closer with another group. I feel like that I would try to, like, okay, Bianca's willing to work with me. These people are willing to work with me. I mean, it's a tightrope, but I think I would rather do that than necessarily throw her under the bus.
I think I agree with you there. I think Connor should maybe have more lobbied to keep Bianca, because I think for him to be in the middle of these two alliances is actually a pretty good position to be in. And instead, he kind of chooses to be at the bottom of the other alliance rather than be sort of in the mix in both of them.
All right. Let's talk about the Yellow Tribe and what was going on there. They don't go to tribal council. They have 8 members strong, led by Nick, who is the reluctant leader of the group. Are you feeling Nick, Steven?
Do you sort of get young Rob Sister Ninas vibes from Nick?
I don't know. Hard that that I do very much like Nick. Nick, I think,
he
is doing it.
Gives me a Rob Sister Ninas vibe. I like him. Yeah, you know, he's a little bit goofy. He's like really smart. He knows the game super well.
Are you saying
well.
Sister Ninas? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like a Sister Nino in Oz.
Okay.
Yeah. No.
I don't know if that's working. To be honest, I don't know.
It sounds like schnoz.
Yeah, it sounds like you're like, you know, it's a little sounds not great.
I think just adding a Z to your name. I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was good.
Yeah. All right. So no, but Nick, really, really interesting spot where he comes into the game and says, I know I don't want to be the leader. I know it's bad for me to be the leader, yet there is no leader here. And he ends up sort of being put in that spot he doesn't want to do. Did you feel like that he ended up fumbling that ball, that cricket ball in that spot?
I don't think you ever have to be the leader. You know, he got, you know, he was like, oh, I've got to. No one else is being the leader. That doesn't mean you need to step up. You know, I do think that might have been a misplay. And certainly Andrew was carefully observing it, right? Andrew immediately out of the gate was saying, you know, how much of a mistake it was for Nick.
Yeah. So do you feel like that he's potentially in a vulnerable position?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Right.
But he did a good job with it.
He did a good job with it for sure. He did a good job with it, but yeah. And I think, you know, they did end up getting fire right ultimately. And, you know, they did end up getting a shelter together. So,
yeah, you know, he didn't end up doing like the GC move where he's the leader. And then by the, you know, he's like, you know what? I don't even want to be the leader anymore. Now somebody else, you know,
he owned it. You're right.
He was like, this is a unnatural fit for me. But if somebody needs to step up to the plate, I'm willing to do it for the team. And I feel like through 2 tribal councils, I think so far, so good.
Yeah, I think Nick is fun to. I like Nick a lot too. He's really fun to watch. I like Nick on that tribe. I like Andrew on that tribe. You know, Sue. Who doesn't love Sue, right?
Yeah, Sue was. What did she call herself? That she was like. She goes down the water slide and gets a wedgie.
Oh, I knew she's not your average Nana. I got that much.
Not your average Nana. Yes, yeah. She's willing to. She'll be the Nana to go down the water slide and get her a wedgie. She doesn't care.
Yeah. I like Andrew. Yeah, Andrew's the you know, I think we've got there's some game coming out of Andrew down the line.
Yeah. And then how about in the immunity challenge? I was so impressed with Kate, who ends up being the thrower in the immunity challenge. When it comes down to it, all the teams are pretty close together. Your boy Connor, there's Kate. Yeah. And then I believe it was Lee. For the red tribe.
The former pro quick cricketer just, you know, obliterated those beanbags that he, you know, from behind.
Cricketers love mates. The mates are very important to those cricketers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does sound pretty biological. right. Cricketers needing to mate.
Cricketers going to mate. So, but yeah. Steven, how about that? So the Yellow Tribe goes with Kate in that spot and she is the person who knocks everything down.
Yeah, she killed it. She did awesome and won the fishing gear, which nobody seemed that excited about. Did you notice that when he like pulled out the thing off the tarp and was like fishing gear, and they're like, oh, cool.
Yeah, they're happy. They're happy about it. Speaking of fishing gear, who is getting the first Australian fishy?
Oh, see, I don't know. This was a really tough one for me. I didn't like who's being super strategic this episode. What do you think?
Well, I don't know if you have one person that gets it over 2 nights.
Yeah,
I don't think that there's one person. I think that you'd probably have to split it up over the first 2 episodes. I think
but who
the episode 1 fishy. I think you probably, I would say, give it to Sam. I think the first week out, I think that he ends up winning that first challenge. And even though that might make
Fishy's not for physical competitions.
Yeah, Bob, but he ends up being the leader for the Blue Tribe. I felt like that there was
being the leader doesn't deserve, you know.
Here's the problem for us, Stephen, that so far that through two nights of the Australian Survivor, the strategy is pretty basic here. That it's pretty on the nose. Basic. There's not anything to really, you know, we can talk about, hey, was that a good decision to get rid of Bianca versus Peter? But the voting has been very straightforward. So there's not a ton of the, you know, strategic moves happening yet at this point.
It's pretty early, though. You know, it's a little too soon. You know, and Bianca did seem to be sort of the one person and the one source for that. So it's too bad that she's gone so fast.
You know, here's Bianca, the private investigator. Did you feel like that she ends up being more specialist-like in did she get unlucky, or do you feel like that she was actually bad?
I think she overplayed. I think that, you know, week two, you've got a guy who wants to quit, and then suddenly you're like starting a whisper campaign, and not a particularly good whisper campaign. You know, it wasn't like, hey, what's up with those two? It was like, we need to get that girl out because of this reason. You know, it wasn't like a subtle, she didn't drop a Sandra seed. You know, she hit her with the Amanda bat. So I thought she kind of overdid it, to be honest. I love Bianca. I loved the music that was on whenever Bianca was playing. You got these like nefarious strings.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she would. What do you think?
I really thought she was probably more unlucky than bad. It's just interesting to me that between private investigator Bianca, specialist Philip, we also have, I'm trying to, who's the guy that was the private eye from or the FBI agent from Survivor Vanuatu? That's with a B,
right?
We're
gonna go. There's one in Thailand, wasn't there? Well, he's maybe the police officer. I don't know.
Yeah.
John or Brady?
Brady. Yeah. Brady. He's pre-merge in. It just seems like that this is not an especially useful skill set on Survivor. It seems that, like, it leads to I don't know. We haven't had the person yet who has this other than Tony, who is a police officer.
Yeah, Tony. That's the perfect example.
Yeah. But I don't know if it's exactly the same.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Steve, we have so many questions that are coming into us. Of course, I got a lot of email questions. I got a lot of questions from people watching the show. So let's dive into that. Okay. Let's start off with Stephen H., who says, two episodes in, and I couldn't tell you half of the contestants. Is 24 too much? Stephen says yes.
Yeah, the Stevens are in agreement. Too much.
Well, what would you have done? Would you have gone with 20? It seems like that there was a reason why they wanted to do 24. I'm not sure if it was necessarily like the episode count that they needed to hit, where they were only going to make enough money for it to make sense to do this if they could do 28 episodes. Like what? So I'm sure that that was a factor, where 13 episodes probably wasn't going to cut it for them to take on the financial risk to do this. It seems like they needed more episodes, and to combat that, they probably said, okay, we need more days, we need more people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it was something structural like that. But still, I mean, you know, and whatever. In a couple of weeks, we'll know who they all are. You know, I mean, the challenge is, it's for people talking about it in the early episodes, just keeping everyone straight. But, you know, ultimately in like a week or two, it'll all make sense, hopefully.
Yeah.
And I think they've done an amazing job of differentiating people. You know, I was thinking in particular of that moment that Elle and Christy got in that second episode. I had no idea who Elle was before that moment. And then it's like she had a personal moment with a different contestant. And then I was like, got it. I know Elle. You know, I think they did a good job of giving a lot
Purple
of people
Ellie? Those moments.
Purple Ellie, yeah. Tegan, though, I'm not sure who Tegan is.
Tegan, yeah. Purple Tegan as well.
On the Yellow Tribe. Who's Tegan?
Yeah, that Tegan, she's a personal trainer model.
Okay.
Yeah, I know that was a thing. All right, this is from Mark's Debation 01. Do the Australian contestants talk strategy different than the American contestants? Stephen, I thought that it was pretty much very, very similar.
Yeah, I think it's the same sort of same kind of conversations. I did think there was a little bit less like alliance scrambling You know, and I, you know, there's a little bit of like, oh, I'm going to see how they're doing in challenges. You know, I think like, someone said that, right? Kylie said that about Flick, you know, see how she does in a challenge before I make a judgment about her.
To me, I think the thing that's so interesting about all of this is that you have people who are on this season of the show who not only have seen every season of the US Survivor, you know, listen to podcasts or total, like, you know, like completely immersed in the strategy. But then there are other people that are in this cast who I feel like that it's almost like the first Survivor for them, where they're sort of like they're playing a totally different game. And I think that especially over the course of 55 days, I think that that's going to be very interesting to see how those two things mesh with each other.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree.
Even more so than on the US Survivor, where we have people who are like, okay, I'm a sort of an actor or model. Like, I think that there are some people who are sort of like, okay, this is Australian Survivor. This is a new thing.
We make our own rules here. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah, just like the Outback.
Yeah.
They make their own rules too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Jeff Coaster says, Steven, as the winner's edit knowingest know-it-all, who do you think is getting the best winner's edit?
Well, so I've been avoiding talking about edit because I think I overdid it last American Survivor. But I think there's a handful of people who are competitive, right? I think, you know, tell me if you think there's anyone I'm missing. You know, Sam, certainly, like you said, I actually think Connor is getting a pretty good edit.
Mm-hmm.
I guess Kate, for sure, right? Nick, I think there's life in Andrew's edit.
That I didn't see the Kate thing as much. I thought Kate was really good in the challenge, but I didn't see the Kate thing as much.
Right. Yeah. Well, I, to be honest, I was including her because all the other people I said were dudes. And I can't think of any one of the women who's getting a great winner's edit. You know, I would have said Bianca if she hadn't been eliminated.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say Sue. Sue got a character moment, but like, she didn't seem to be a part of the strategy.
I didn't think that was winner's edit as much. Christy, that she had a meltdown, but then had the bounce back. And is that potential winner edit?
No, I mean, that would
be. She told her dad that she was going to be on Survivor from when she was 8.
She got a really. I mean, that moment was better for Elle than for Christy. You know, Elle sat down, was there. She consulted Christy. Christy really looked crazy in those few moments. That was. She got like the Abby Maria edit, you know?
Yeah, it really was the Abby Maria edit where she was like, somebody took my bag. I know they took my bag. It's around here somewhere. Did they take it just to mess with me? Are they trying to make me quit the game? Well, it's not going to work. Yeah.
And then it was like there the whole time. It was really. And then
here's my bag. It's on the tree.
But then, and then she was sure that someone like put it back there, that they were all like out to get her. That was pretty. It was a good moment. It was. Does seem to be a male centric show in a way, you know, maybe more so than the American Survivor. Someone commented that I think Jonathan taught only when he first asked, when he was first talking to the contestants, the only people we saw were him talking to men, actually. So it was interesting.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, okay. Get with the program, Australian Survivor.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Maybe, you know, it could be wrong. We don't know. Maybe it's a different production team, so maybe they have different editorial and narrative strategies. But those are the ones that stood out to me. And what do you think? Lee or Rohan?
Do I have to pick? Am I Team Lee or Team Rohan?
No, but do you think either of them?
What are you? Are you Team Lee or Team Rohan?
No, I'm saying either of them as a unit. Could either of them be the winner?
Hey, let's not get into the unit talk yet, Steven. I'll say that I would feel like more Lee than Rohan in terms of winner edit.
Yeah. What about Rohan had is like, you know, I'm not your ordinary model. I'm a very smart model.
Yeah, I guess so. I think they all say that though.
What about Evan?
Yeah. Evan is good. I, you know, in the first episode I was saying like, oh, Evan and Christy, am I getting a little bit of like a Australian Todd and Amanda vibe? But then I was pretty quickly out on that by episode 2.
Yeah. I agree. I thought there was a moment early on in episode 1 where he seemed to be, I mean, he's the narrator of that tribe sometimes, but he's also proven to be pretty wrong. Like, that whole
especially,
scene about him.
Yeah. In hindsight, when their three-person alliance was Evan, Christy, and Dez. I mean, that would have been an alliance for the ages.
Yeah. And he was talking about how close he was with everybody, and they were like, he's kind of annoying.
Yeah, it's like, we kind of let him think he's in our alliance, and all he wants to do is talk strategy, so we just let him think he's working with us because better to have him with us than be working against us. So
what about Kat? You know, she did get a bunch of airtime.
I don't like her sometimes.
Yeah. She, you know, her benevolent dictator strategy or whatever it was. Yeah. What do you think of
that? Can you have one of those, Stephen? Benevolent dictator?
I guess. I don't know. What did she call herself?
Out, right?
It was something like a lovable dictator. Lovable dictator.
Lovable dictator. Yes. Yeah, I don't know what the read is on Kat. I mean, that she got into it with Dez, but it didn't really seem like that the other guys, that the Lee and the Rohan, what do we call them? Lohan? Can we call that the alliance? Lohan, I didn't think that they were super down with Kat.
Yeah.
They felt like this. She's like, eh, they were sort of like, it seemed like there's other people they like better than Kat.
Yeah. Can we talk about something that really outraged me, though?
Of course.
This was really Please. Upsetting to me about this, the first episode. When the Red Tribe was walking out of camp, that was just a disaster of a line. Did you see that? They're all walking out, and then Dez and Evan are like 30 feet behind. Dez isn't even walking in line. What was up with that?
Yeah. they're really, I think that's where you're starting to see the show. You know, this is episode one of a new production.
No, Blue Tribe was freaking,
they nailed
it. They were on it. Yeah. Blue Tribe's line when they left for Tribal Council was, they were great.
I don't know.
I don't blame that on the show. I blame that on Red Tribe.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Let's take some more questions. Tyler Applegate.
Tyler Applegate here. You go. No. I don't want to monopolize all the questions. Who is the better reality show contestant, Dez from Australia or Glenn from the Boogie Down Bronx?
Well, you don't know who that is. I'm outraged that you even had to ask. Glenn at least never got voted out. Dez from the Boogie Down Brisbane, he ends up being voted out first unanimously. I think he is probably worse, if we're going to rank these things, than Glenn from the Boogie Down Bronx.
Neither one
are particularly good at a puzzle, though.
Ron Chan wants to know, do you expect any RHAP references from Andrew this season? Is Andrew an RHAP fan?
Andrew Savage?
Who's Andrew is on the Yellow Tribe.
Yeah. No, I don't know. The thing is, Stephen, and this is an interesting question that we got from another person. Let me see if I can find it. This is from Mar from Melbourne. She asked, how do you feel about Andrew stealing Brian Heidick's iconic "I'm going on a business trip" line?
This
is the great thing about Australian Survivor, is that I think that there's an opportunity for all these Australian Survivor players to really just like take anything that was good from American Survivor, any line, and just sort of like plant the flag and say it in Australian Survivor like it's their own. Like somebody could have come in and be like, I'm the Dragon Slayer. They call me the Dragon Slayer. I'm here to slay the dragon. And like, oh, wow. I think that doesn't everybody just get to call like it's like a land grab right now.
Yeah. I don't know. I think Australian, like, you know, there's a pretty big audience for Australia, for American Survivor in Australia. I think people are going to know, but you're right. Maybe it will be seen as making it fresh.
Yeah. I'm the wizard. Oh, well, look at me. I think that the game has evolved, Jonathan. I think there's voting blocks this season.
Okay.
Somebody could come in and just like, you know, to take everything.
Yeah. Depending on what happens in season 33 with voting blocks, we'll talk about that.
All the intellectual property is up for grabs right now, Stephen.
Yeah. Yeah. Are there going to be immunity idols in this game? There really is no talk of idols.
In the preview that for next week, it looks like immunity idols are going to be in play. So I really felt like that it was a missing element in those first two votes, because it seems so straightforward, especially mid-tribal council in that second one. From the start, it seemed like that Dez had no chance to turn it around. So I'm glad that if we have the idols in play, that at least we have that element where anybody could potentially go out at one of these tribals.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's take a few more questions and let's do the email questions. George Wise, where does Dez rank in memorable first boots? Steven,
definitely the most memorable first boot in Australia.
Certainly. Yeah. Certainly. I think he's on that list of, if we're going to put him in the American list, you know, you have people who are sort of like, they just got a raw deal, and people who were sort of like memorably bad. And I think he's probably on that list of people who are certainly memorable. I think he was probably kind of bad. I don't think he was terrible, but he was definitely memorable.
Definitely memorable.
Yeah. I think that had he come out and been helpful around camp from the start, do you think it would have been a different story for him?
Yeah, I think it would be a totally different story for him if he had been helpful around camp from the start. But I do think, I also think he was not going to fit in with that group.
Yeah.
Bruce Audit wants to know, 55 days is epic. Can't imagine the way in at the end. How much would either have you lost in that long of season if you went final two?
I don't know. What, 40? I mean, I lost 30 pounds in 38 days. Yeah. So what, you know, I mean, what, 45 pounds?
I lost 33 pounds in 39 days. So more pounds in more days. But I also think that at a certain point, your body does stabilize to a certain degree.
Yeah.
I wonder if, like, I think it probably wouldn't have gone that much more.
And I wonder if also they may make it harder in the beginning, but or as hard in the beginning, and then sort of like give them more sustenance as the game continues on to get them to 55 days. I think that the producers probably are sort of like, it's not like, all right, well, it's 55 days and we gave them this much rice and that's it. So, you know, it's day, I don't care if it's day 28 and they're out of rice. That's it. Well, let's go. You know, that's all we said.
Yeah.
You know, they got to keep them alive for 55 days.
Yeah. It's not good TV if they're just like dying.
Yeah. All right. Take this question, then we'll do some email questions.
Kyle Hain wants to know, was Tyson even close to being the host, or was that never really possible?
I think it was pretty close. I think it was down to Tyson and LaPaglia, and I think they flipped a coin.
Yeah, I heard that. Tyson flew down there just to do the coin flip.
Tyson flew down to do the coin flip. Tyson said tails, and then he was said that he regrets that it was heads. And he usually picks heads.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? All right. So, Steven, let's do some email questions that we got from some of our listeners and see what some of our emailers had to say. This is from Emily from Tasmania. She wanted to know, do you think that the production has the chops not only to attract brand new viewers, but also to excite sensitive super fans? Or should we be embarrassed by the quality, not quilty, of Survivor Down Under?
Oh, I mean, there's nothing to be embarrassed about. I thought, the quality was fantastic. A lot of great contestants, you know, big fans of the show. I thought this was great. I honestly thought this felt like Survivor, right? This didn't feel like a lower rent version of Survivor. This was Survivor. It was like, you know, many of the same. You know, I thought it was great.
Yeah, no, I thought it was very, very strong. Very good job. David emails us and wants to know, Connor is apparently such a massive Survivor fan. Do you think that he was just trying to pay homage to Mike Scoopin by grabbing the stick in the fire?
No.
No? David also adds about Lee's background as a professional cricketer. I was wondering about this in terms of being the pro athlete. Is he like a Grant? Is he Brad Culpepper? Is he a big deal? David says, as far as Lee as a professional cricket career goes, he was far from a superstar. He played for the Australian cricket team, essentially the major leagues. However, he mostly represented his state, which is essentially the minor leagues, a summer-only commitment. Having said that, in episode two, nearly all the cricketers on his level could knock off those blocks from 50 yards away with a cricket ball.
Hey, which he did with a beanbag. I mean, you know, like, I don't know if he's, so if he's not a major league athlete, still much more athletic than I ever will be.
Yeah. Did you like the strategy of carrying Lee through the obstacle course?
I thought that was a fun strategy. I actually did like that, right? Like, because it often does come down to like the thing at the end, you know, whatever carnival game or puzzles at the end. And I thought that was smart. And Lee also was able to, you know, assist them when he was going through the obstacles. You know, there were a few moments when they obviously got weighed down literally by him. But I thought that it was overall good. What did you think of that?
I thought it was interesting. I mean, I think that you sort of like the conventional wisdom would be to put your lightest person as the person to carry over. But I like that he was able to sort of get through some of the obstacles on his own. And I mean, and it looked like they were able to sort of make up some time now.
Yeah, no, I thought it was good.
Yeah. So good work there. This is from our good friend Louise. She said, in your preview podcast, Steven mentioned how tough the Aussies are. Was this theory disproven by Connor's crybabyitis in the ocean after burning his hand with the stick?
I thought he was pretty chill about it. You know, like he just burned his hand on day one of Survivor. You know, this has been a dream of his and he's freaking, you know, suddenly he's like risking infection and evacuation. And he's just kind of like hanging out in the water, you know, like good for him.
Boy, the listeners and the viewers were so taken by this. Even Mar from Melbourne wrote in to say, if your Survivor season is set in Australia, does it automatically mean that someone has to have their hands burned by fire
wow.
and the camp washed away by a body of water?
Yeah, it's funny. Wow, that fire thing really. I felt terrible for Connor, but I obviously am a Connor fan. You know, what about you?
Yeah, I think it's that has to happen. I think that's canon. I think that has to be the case. Surprised that medical didn't get involved sooner? I mean, I've been a little surprised, especially maybe because we're in sort of like the sensitive co-wrong fallout where we have to have the doctor appear in almost every single episode of Survivor. Through 2.5 hours of this, we had Peter talking about how he's really not feeling well or he wants to quit. We have Connor getting burned. No sign of medical so far in Australian Survivor.
I wonder if medical didn't look at his hand and give him some burn cream or something. I mean, just sitting in the ocean is like as good as that is. I wonder if they didn't step in there.
All right. Steven, let's look ahead towards next week and take a look at who might be the next person to go. Any predictions on who the next person out is? Is it Peter is the person who's the front runner?
I mean, I think we saw some potential conflict, right, between Nick and Andrew. I mean, it's not inconceivable to me that would be Nick, although obviously I'd be disappointed by that. Peter certainly has got to be up there, for the Blue Tribe, right? He's the obvious choice from that group. And from the Red Tribe, you've got Chris, Crazy Christy, and although maybe we did see her have her rally, and then Evan.
Yeah. Do you think that the hidden immunity idol is going to be more of a liability in a season like this where we are used to, just going back to that, like what we were talking about with the like sort of like the Venn diagram of people that are way into strategy, people right. who are like sort of like this is the first season of a new show here, technically right. the third season of Survivor Australia. Somebody who goes all out for making the kind of move you made in Cambodia where I'm going to go for this advantage, come hell or high right. water. And do you feel like that could be sort of people coming to a disagreement over how to view something like that?
I do think there's that. There doesn't seem to be that sort of like meta strategy level here, right? Where it's like, that kind of like Mike.
The game has unevolved.
Yeah. Mike and Worlds Apart. We're all players here. Sorry, I'll never do an impression again after that one. Where he was kind of like made it really self-aware. Like everyone go scramble because we all know we're all playing that game. There doesn't seem to be that here. I certainly think that could hurt something like an advantage, like my advantage. I think that makes an immunity idol extra powerful, right? I mean, the problem with an immunity idol now in American Survivor is that everyone is expecting it. Everyone's on the lookout for it. And therefore, everyone is always trying to prevent it. Or to sort of obviate its play so that it's incredibly difficult to play an immunity idol correctly. And in fact, Jeremy, when he played it for me, said part of the reason he wanted to play it for me was just he thought like the chance of him actually knowing exactly where the vote was going to go and having an opportunity to do something about it was so slim that he felt like he had to take it. Here, people are so forthright about what they're doing. If you had an idol, you could really affect the game.
Steven, remember when you got that advantage back in Survivor Cambodia? Remember that? And then when you got it and you said,
"This is a game changer."
Wow.
Yeah, game changed.
What? Yeah, you changed the game, Steven.
It definitely changed my game, but not for the better.
Yeah, such a game changer. Okay, so Steven, so much fun to talk through everything from Survivor Australia. Anything else you want to touch on from the 2.5 hours that we watched of the show?
The one thing I should say is, I do think that some contestants will be listening to this from the show. And don't, guys. It's always a terrible idea. Yeah. I want everyone else but the contestants.
I want Dez from a sleepover tonight to be calling you out and your spectacles.
Yeah. We're going to get it wrong. You were there for so long. We're seeing such an edited version of the show. So, we're seeing just a slice of the life. We're going to infuriate you. Listen at your own risk. And, that's on you.
That's on you. That's AU. So we're looking forward to seeing what the response is going to be to all that. Steven, we've also, since the last time you and I have spoken on a podcast, gotten the release of the Millennials versus Gen X cast. Any thoughts you want to mention on that while we're here?
I've been so busy. But I haven't, I actually saw Zeke on the street today in Williamsburg.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I was shouting at Zeke. And he had his headphones in and he was running. And I don't know, maybe he was like deliberately ignoring me.
You sure you didn't imagine it?
I ran down the street and intercepted him. I was like, Zeke. And he's like, oh, hey. He was very, he was nice, but he was in a rush.
Yeah. Okay. He brushed you off, is what you're saying.
No, I hope it's not. That's not what it was. I hope that's not. I think he was just in a rush. I think he was in a rush. Why would you do that to me?
I don't know.
I think he was in a rush.
Yeah.
No, he was very nice. He was very nice, but he was in a rush.
Okay. So much fun. So much Survivor going on right now. So we have all of the Australian Survivor that Steve and I are going to talk about. The return of Survivor in the U.S., Survivor 33, is but what? 4 weeks away now? I think we are tomorrow will be 4 weeks from tomorrow, right? Or Wednesday will be 4 weeks from Wednesday.
Tomorrow will be 4 weeks from tomorrow. What is that?
No, no. Wednesday. I thought it was Tuesday for a second. It's Monday. It's Tuesday in Australia. So for our Australian viewers, on Wednesday, it'll be 4 weeks from Wednesday that we have the kickoff of Survivor 33.
Yeah. I'm really excited about it. Apparently they say it's a good season.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Let me know when they say it's a bad season.
Didn't they do that for like 32?
I guess Call Wrong was the one. That was when they said, and it wasn't terrible. Yeah. It wasn't bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we've got a lot of stuff to work through, of course. Nicole and I will be getting to our preview of the Millennials and the Gen Xers pretty soon. We're going to break that up into two parts and do that over the course of two different shows. So the first of those should be coming sometime in the next 7 days or so as we get some time to record that. Plus much more of the previewing of the season 33 stuff, plus all of the Big Brother and much more coming up here on the podcast. Of course, you can follow Stephen Fishback on Twitter at Stephen Fishback. Stephen, do you do any sort of preview on the People blog?
No, just because of time. I just don't have time to do it. No.
Okay. No. All right. Yeah. All right. Well, Stephen Fishback, that no foreplay from him on the Survivor. He just goes right into the season, and we will begin that coverage for you coming up.
Who do you think two episodes in has the winner's edit? That's always what I want to know. Who's got the winner's edit? And do you really agree with me that that Nick is like Rob Cesternino's?
I would be honored if you said that Nick was like a Rob.
It reminded me of you in the Amazon a little bit, just his physicality and all of it. I thought
I don't want to insult Nick by saying that. Okay. I would say that Sam to me is the winner's edit through two nights.
Yeah, I don't know. Sam was a little bit too much. You know, there's too much like Sam's great.
Yeah, well, that's what winner's edit is, isn't it?
I guess.
Right?
I don't know. He's like the Sammy amazing of this season. I thought the
Sammy amazing, that's going to stick. Okay. Yeah. All right, Steven, what's your pick for the hashtag? I got three nominees for you, okay? Number one, chicken situation.
Oh, that's pretty. Oh, chicky situation.
Chicky situation. That's good. Yeah. That's good too. Chicky situation. Yeah. That helps it.
Yeah.
Nominee number two, the disaster.
Oh, that's pretty good too.
And number three, Cesternino's. Three good picks for the hashtag.
I don't want you tell me what you what do you like? What do you like?
I think chicky situation really is.
Is that to the why, right? Chicky, or is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Chicky situation.
Anytime we could go Sam Wandel, sir, on the podcast, always fun.
Well, plus one of the tribes is like Sanapu, right? It's like the most
Sanapu. All right. So much fun stuff. Of course, you can subscribe to this podcast. RobHasAWebsite.com/SurvivorAU. That takes you to the iTunes page. We'll be back next Monday. Did you like doing this live or you want to do the audio version?
I like it live. What do you think?
Well, okay. All right. So we will nail down a time next week I could do it a little earlier next week, but we'll talk about that off air and figure out what's going to, I mean, I'd like to know also from, was this a terrible time for our Australian listeners also if they want to join in live?
Someone tweeted that it was a good time.
Okay, good. I think it's lunchtime. I think it's lunchtime in Australia right now. Also, you can email the show after you watch the episodes, but try not, just put like episode 3, episode 4. Don't put in the subject line because Steven and I may not get to watch at the same time. So just don't spoil the episode in the subject line.
Oh, yeah, please.
SurvivorAU@RobHasAWebsite.com. And lots of fun stuff. Steven and I are working on a lot of stuff for you guys. So stay tuned for that. And Steven, anything else?
No, this was great. This was fun.
All right. Thanks so much to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Take care, everybody. Bye.
Bye. Survivor, know it all.